You're listening to the Vashon Sports Machine with Oscar Lopez, your source for all the latest sports news and analysis.
This is Jess Fishlock from the OL Reign, and when I want to keep up with pirate football, I listen to Oscar Lopez on 101.9 FM.
Hello, Voice of Vashon listeners, and welcome to the Vashon Island Sports Machine on KVSHLP 101.9 FM or voiceofvashon.org. My name is Oscar Lopez, and today I'm sitting down with the new head coach of the Vashon Pirates boys soccer team, John Thomas, to discuss what he and his new staff bring to the table as coaches and what their plans are for the upcoming season. John, first of all, I'd like to officially congratulate you on your new post as head coach and say welcome to the job. Obviously, you've been here as assistant coach for how many years?
I think I did the boys. This is my fourth season with the boys, and I worked just one practice for April. This will be my fourth season with the boys.
Well, it's been great to have you, and nice to have you in this elevated role. So I wanted to start it off talking about something that you spoke about when we had that parent-student meeting a couple days ago, which was the concept of a student-led team. So I'm just hoping you can re-elaborate what you mean by that to those listening and how you're planning on implementing that this season.
Yeah, no, I think most successful teams are player-led. You know, there's only so much the coach isn't out on the field. And sometimes I think the coaches take an oversized role. I'm not interested in that. I think the players got to want it for themselves. And if the players own the responsibility for not only how they play as an individual, but how they play as a team, and they feel empowered with that, then they'll start to own that. My Wisconsin Badgers won the national championship in 1995, playing under the coach I played under. And they basically took the whole team over. And that team ended up going all the way. And I really think that I learned something from that. And I think it's important for the players to take ownership not only of themselves, but also looking around and seeing where their teammates need support. And, you know, these kids are pretty, we have a lot of kids who play at a pretty high level. They watch a lot of soccer, a lot of EPL, English Premier League. And, you know, frankly, they know the game better sometimes than the coaches. So why not let them run it?
Yeah, I like that idea. I mean, in concept, you've got all these players that are, as you say, greatly intelligent when it comes to the game, and you could lead them, but they are still high school kids. And my next question is, what does that mean for your role during games as a head coach on the touchline?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, great point. Okay, so you're right. Well, they're kids. Sometimes I don't think adults give kids enough credit. I spend a lot of time with kids. And kids will surprise you, and given the opportunity to step up, generally they will. Now, there's some that are a little less mature than others, maybe you will say,
right?
And that's okay. You know, you got to know your kids, right? So the kids that need a little structure, we give a little structure. You know, we were doing some sprint work last night, and the kids come around, so I'm careful about asking, you know, are we done? Or are we going to do one more? And I ask each. You know, I pick a random kid sometimes, and sometimes the kids are like, that's enough. And sometimes the kids are like, no, we need to do more. So that's an example, right? Like, I'm careful about who I pick, why I pick it. If I feel like if I think that they need to do more, then I'll pick a kid to make a suggestion. And I know that kid's going to be a hard charger. If I feel like we're kind of winding down and I see a kid who's starting to struggle a little bit, I'll ask them again, an opportunity for leadership. Sometimes they surprise me, you know, Weston Dorr yesterday is like, no, we got more, let's go. You know, so, you know, I thought Weston was feeling the hard week of training, but he powered right through it. And I like the fact that he stepped up there.
Yeah, he was great in practice yesterday.
Fabulous player.
He was really great. All right. So open for a second. We can just back it up to last season. One thing that I saw from up in the booth was that we struggled a little bit as a team to dig ourselves out of a mental trench in difficult games. Like when we are down, we sort of had we weren't able to find the mental drive to fight back. And I'm wondering how you're hoping to combat that this year with the concept of a player-led team.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's about the constituency of the team. we had a very young team last year. You know, the fact that the kids got to the Final Four with mostly sophomores, I would think. There was a, you know, we had two seniors, but the primary driving roles were really led by the sophomores, even a couple freshmen. And when the team, like Tony was mentioning it last week, you know, when a team goes into those kind of playoff rounds, sometimes, you know, not that they're not used to the pressure. A lot of these guys play in ECNL or ECRL teams, so they know what pressure is. But they, you know, they're young. They're 15-year-old kids getting beat up by men. So I don't think it was necessarily about the mental toughness. I think that there was a few things that if I could rewind, I would do differently, and we're trying to do those things differently now. But generally, I don't think it was a mental toughness. We just hadn't had... We hadn't ran across that level of physicality, and that level of physicality we just weren't able to rise towards. And partly is because, you know, we had the players had 25 pounds on us and a foot and a half. So I think that's part of it. I think we did go down in one league play where we were not playing our best game. And if I remember right, we came back, evened it up, and ended up taking it in the end. So I don't necessarily think that this team doesn't have the resilience.
Are you talking about Bellevue Christian away?
Yeah, I think so, that little skinny field.
What I saw in that game was, and he graduated, but I saw, and this is not the only thing you can attribute to that comeback, but I saw Ellis Cutterback come out of halftime and didn't say much, but he worked so hard. He was exactly, in my mind, what a captain should be as a role model for players' intensity on the field. He, in my opinion, dragged us back into that game. And then once we got our field back, it was just free flow.
No question. I think that's spot on. I think that the seniors have to be engaged. You know, like I was saying, I remember when these freshmen came in, this junior class now, I thought about putting the freshmen against the varsity and reconsidered because I thought the freshmen would beat the varsity and then the varsity would check out. And then, you know, we would have a spiral to not having a successful outcome as a result of that. So this is exactly the point. It's the seniors stepping up. So we have got we've got some fabulously skilled seniors this year. Those seniors cannot check out. We will not accomplish our goals if those seniors check out. So regardless if they get named captain or not, they will be leaders on the team. And I spend the next 2 weeks, they are my group that I'm working with. In our coach-led specific goals. And we're talking a lot about how the seniors are the heart and the soul of the team in the sense of really leading us in hard situations where skill is one thing, but grit is what we're after. So hopefully they'll step up in that role.
It transitions well into my next question. I'm hoping you can introduce and then walk me through your selections for captains this year.
Okay. Yeah. So we actually haven't made those yet as of the recording, but we will in a few hours.
Okay.
We went through quite a process. This is not something that was a rite of passage that has been naturally the procedure over the past years where the seniors just kind of semi-elect themselves or the outgoing seniors name the top juniors for the year prior. We did an extensive process with the entire coaching staff for three reasons. One, we were going to have an extremely difficult time this year, and we knew it. We had 11, 12 guys, I think, at least a dozen guys. There's some guys even beyond that dozen that were excellent candidates, would have been fabulous. I would be happy with any of those captains, like really solid applicants. We put that to a vote of the team. Everybody voted for that. We got who we thought from those results, you know, who we saw as the leaders. Those then they had to apply for an interview. So the coaching staff of four all was the tribunal. They came in and we went through a half hour interview and they explained to us things like what makes a leader? What kind of leader are you? What are the things that you struggle with in terms of leadership? What do you think your strengths are? What complementary skills would you look for in a co-captain or a tri-captain? And the reason why we went through that was threefold. Like I said, the first was that it's a hard decision for the coaches and we wanted to get it right. The second was we want the whole team to start to think like leaders. So regardless if they get the armband or not, the fact that they start to consider, what does it take? What does it make to be a good follower? How do you support someone? If someone's having a hard time, what do you do to bring that team up? So the goal of that interviewing process was not only to elect somebody, but also to get the whole team pulling on the rope. And I feel like that part was successful. The third pillar of that is, you know, this isn't, you know, world peace, right? This is like, you know, high school soccer, right? Mm-hmm. So these kids are going to be using those skills, having a very formal interview, having very hard questions. We recorded the sessions. We made it very structured purposely so that, you know, the guys go on to their college program and they're applying to a school or they're trying to get a job or, you know, they're interviewing with their boss. They can come across articulate. They can make sure that they are addressing their strengths and weaknesses. And it was great practice for the kids. So that was our process. We then started practice. So the first week of practice, we had a few guys who chose to lead in other ways, weren't going to go for the armband. But we did have 9 individuals who made it through those rounds. And we then said, okay, you've got a week, lead. And we just watched. And we aren't telling them to do anything. We're just watching and seeing what's whatever their style was. We watched that, and that was interesting, and we gained knowledge from that. Coaches all sat down, and we all said, "Hey, what do we think? Do we have?" And I'll be amazed. Every single coach came to the exact same conclusion in isolation. So we're going to be talking today about nominating 2 captains for the 2025 season. We thought about 3. 3 would have been nice, but the guys were so close in that last spot that you just couldn't choose. You just couldn't choose. They were so strong. But the 2 guys of Isaac Newcomb and Lewis Thompson really stood out as clear leaders. And they were not only leaderships from the week we just did, they had excellent interviews. They had the highest vote count amongst their peers. And I just really think that even though these other guys were getting 95s or 96s out of 100, these guys were just 99s. Not to say that they don't have stuff to work on. But one thing we will say to them is, you know, I told Lewis last year when we put him in mid-season as captain, don't think that this is a pass for next year. It is not. They will have to earn it next year too. But as far as we are right now, we're going with those 2 captains.
And he has most certainly earned it. I mean, as you say, I don't envy your guys' job of making that decision because, you know, I've been at practice for the last week and I've felt leadership pretty much from everywhere. And not only from the people who were trying to impress you, like pretty much everybody. And I think this is a testament to the you know, player-led culture that you have. Everybody is pushing each other to work harder.
And supporting each other when you know, when it's not. I mean, if I screw up and play a back pass to the goalkeeper and it gets picked off and someone shoots and scores the goal, I knew I blew it. But just you know, having Gavin come over to me and say, "Hey, you got this. You got this. Come on, next." That ain't going to happen again. You got what happens next is what's important. All of a sudden, I feel like Gav's got my back. And now I can play to my potential without being like, "Oh, I hope I don't screw up again." And we talked a lot about that in the captain's interviews, and we'll be talking about that a lot as a team. It means so much more coming from your player on the field who says, "We still support you." You see it in the EPL all the time when someone screws up. Just guys go up, you say, "Hey, come on, we got this." And that means everything. That gets that player back in the game.
So, in my opinion, at least, it's real easy to be a captain when your team is winning and, you know, everything's going good. You can just dish out compliments, make sure everybody stays focused. Yes, but it's, you know, it's not that hard of a job. It becomes hard to be a captain when you're in a fight and, you know, maybe your team's down or it's, you know, it's nil-nil and you're in a tough game. So, and this is just strictly speaking, the players wearing the armband, not necessarily leaders in practice or just leaders of the squad mentally. I mean, when you are wearing that armband. So talk me through what you think Lewis Thompson and Isaac Newcomb are going to bring in that scenario.
Right. No, I mean, we've talked about this a lot. Like, so just to a quick call out, we thought about doing a division of labor a little bit with regard to the captain's responsibilities. Some kids, when they interviewed, were really great in terms of being empathetic, you know, and really having a pulse on where the team is kind of emotionally. Finn Kennan, fabulous interview, like probably the top, like just thoughtful,
well articulated, like such an impressive interview. So, you know, he's going to be keeping an eye to those kinds of things. You have a guy like Gavin Keenan, who was Defensive Player of the Year last year, clearly the leader on the defense. Hard decision not to pick Gav this year because he absolutely is a commander back there. He needs to get a little louder. Regardless of whether he's wearing that armband or not, I'll tell you that the players better be getting back and picking up their men if Gavin is directing them in that role. So although Gav has that, he also has some growth to do in a few areas, specifically with Isaac and Lewis. You might put Oscar Cobb in that hard, what do we do when things go wrong? Oscar Cobb has always stepped up. When you look at when times go hard, he is kind of the emotional leader of that squad, very much so. Oscar, I feel like he needs to watch more soccer. He needs to understand more of the tactics and the balance and the shape and structure of the team. So both Isaac and Lewis, we feel, have probably the best acumen with regard to how they're seeing the field and how they're adjusting. If we as coaches are taking a role of getting them prepared for the game and then stepping back during the game, I need those players to make the adjustments of when we press. Okay, it's not going well now. What do we do? I feel like those two guys can solve that problem. And I have ultimate trust that them, along with the other players on the team, that they can fix those problems. I'm not worried about either of them, like, putting everything they have into it. You know, the other day at practice, where it was a quite an intense scrimmage, and Lewis comes out and he's got like just a huge gash across his thigh, and I'm like, what'd you get? You get clipped there? And he's like, huh? Oh, didn't even notice it.
Yeah, Lewis has been taking a beating in this first week.
And I got news for you. He's been dishing it out too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
And he knows it. Like, he knows it. He's a lightning rod. Mason's a lightning rod. We got guys that can take hits. Isaac Newcomb can take hits. Mm-hmm. You know, that's they're going to lead by example. Oscar can lead, take hits. So those guys, you know, teams are going to be coming for us. Absolutely, they're going to be coming for us. They're going to play low block, hard play, and just try to hold us. And we got to learn how to crack them open and then maybe change tactics.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would do. If I'm a coach of a team like Quincy or Royal, I'd be looking at our film and say, all right, these guys technically, probably at this point because Overlake graduated some guys, these are probably the best, this might be the best team in 1A, technically. So what I'm not going to do is I'm going to come in and try to have a, you know, tiki-taka battle with them. As you say, low block, we're going to make this hard on them. Every time that guy, that one Avery, they don't know Avery McLean, but that little blonde number six who's so great on the ball, every time he touches it, he's going to feel someone. We're just going to make it hard. Have to be ready for that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have to say, you know, like when we used to play, like I played at Wisconsin, when we played Indiana, we're the top team in the nation. Like, you just couldn't keep up with them technically. So, you know, like our mentality, which I've shared with the kids, was like, you know, when Johnny Trask gets the ball, he's going to know I'm there. And then, you know, knock him down in the midfield, like let him know, you know, reach your hand out. Hey, nothing personal, but I'm going to hit you like that next time you touch the ball. Just like that, and help him out. So it's not angry. It's friendly, but it's not soft.
Yeah, absolutely not. And just one more, I'd like to agree with what you said about Lewis and Isaac's ability to make those that have that tactical vision. You know, I feel it when I'm, even if it's just a little 4v4 scrimmage to small goals and I have them on my team, you know, they're always talking about how we can change this, change this, change this, because no matter if you're doing a player-led team or not, your captains are your field generals.
Absolutely.
You know, you're sitting at the desk, they're out, you know, in the battle. Relaying your orders.
Yeah, and I think the guys who really, you know, there's going to be some disappointed guys today, no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. I think if those guys really sit back and they think about it, they really think about it as a team, as a structure, as a format, as a shape, they know that those two guys are the leaders of that. Mason Haynes he was a strong candidate as well as a sophomore. Mason has and Jeff as well, both two sophomores, yeah. Like that worked against them. But those guys also have good field vision. And, you know, like Yoni knows his stuff as well. So he didn't choose to be captain, but he's going to be helping lead the attack. I expect that, you know, Lewis is going to be much more in the midfield structure, even though he probably be playing the 10. which is like an attacking midfielder. Mason and Yoni and Rowan, I expect to really take control of how to be creative in that final third. And they're going to be responsible for the patterns, the timing, working out with the problems. I completely trust in that attacking third to be the leaders on that team.
And you say, I imagine you're right that some people are going to be disappointed today, but I'm not sure too many people are going to be that surprised. And I think it's a testament to how great of candidates Lewis and Isaac are that people are probably expecting this to be the choice. Like when you said that to me, my mind went to, that's probably what I would have done too.
Right. But on the other hand, if you looked at, you know, like Finn, Gavin, and OC, oh my God, that would be such a strong captain triad. Eliminating
yeah,
those
it guys. It totally
like,
would.
Finn could take, like, we have thought this through. We feel confident in our decision that we made here. And I am welcoming the conversations that I'm going to have one-on-one with each of the kids about, you know, hey, there's room for growth here. And, you know, for most of them, there's next year or the year after. I certainly expect to see them again in this application process.
And that's another important thing in my mind as a coach is have that relationship with your players where they can talk one-on-one. There's an example midway through practice, Zan London Chambers was talking to me and he was complaining because he's right now he's battling with Caden Miller for that outside back role. And
yes,
he was saying to me, he was like, oh, well, I thought I played really well, but it didn't really feel like JT was watching me. So I told him, I was like, well, don't tell me, you know, JT wants to, you want to hear that from him.
No. So he called me up. I mean, it's tough. You know, I get, you know, we got 40 kids or 35 kids or whatever. And, you know, they all want your attention.
Yeah.
A lot of times this has been a tougher week as well in that, you know, I've been onboarding the staff and just really trying to set the tone of the year and making sure that we're consistent in our coaching, making sure that we're all on the same page, speaking from the same. But yet I have such a talented group of guys I'm working with this year that, you know, I want to give them the latitude to be able to do that, but I want to make sure that we're concise and we can talk more about that. But in a nutshell, I was doing all of that and I told Zan I'd be watching him on that outside back and I failed to do that in that moment, in that one scrimmage. But I then said, okay, now we're going 11v11 the next day. And I did pay attention to him. And he is playing great. He has got some good, impressive speed. He's really a lot more focused, I feel like, on that defense. But Caden Miller as well. Like, it's going to be a brutal choice. Caden is so playing so well as well. So those guys are going to have a little bit of a battle for that outside back for sure. And that's going to make an Oscar Cobb a little nervous as well because those guys might be hunting for him too next. So between those three outside backs right there, like there's other guys as well, but those three guys for two spots, boy, that's an easy rotation. And I don't feel like we lose anything in that.
And it's, you know, Tony Crudo made the point that we were talking, Chauncey and I were doing our lineups and he was like, oh, the lineups don't even matter. You guys are so good. You could put a trash can in goal and you'd win whatever. And my point to him was, well, that's exactly why these conversations are so fun. Because yes, in my opinion, we could put out our C team and win our district. But I think the little changes like Zan's an amazing player. Caden's an amazing player. What does Caden bring? What does Zan bring? You know, like, these are the type of things that if I were coach, I'd be up all night thinking about this.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we have some disagreements with what the lineup needs to be, which I love it. You know, I'm not a dictator on like what lineup we play. I think we have the fitness and the skill to play a 3-5-2. I actually personally like the 3-5-2, but I've been beaten back in submission by my guys to playing a 4-4-2. And, you know, mostly, you know, to Tony's point about us calving goals, that's because we were experimenting with our defense. Like, fine. You know, if we try, if we let a few goals in because we're trying to play a different formation, I'm down with that. Look at the latter half of the season. We weren't dropping those goals. We tightened that thing down. So, you know, the beginning of the season, it's about experimentation. I mean, even though we have high expectations and we run, you know, like that passing contest that we did the other day, if you were off by 6 inches, you got demoted. I'm not trying to say you have to be perfect. I want them to make mistakes. I want you to experiment. But in the end, you know, you got to get that back four locked down. And I feel like we will. We will need to have Last year, we struggled in that position specifically because we had a back four, but we didn't have a fifth that was really playing at that level. Ferdy Escovedo joined late, and he was a hope, but we integrated him so late in the season as that fifth rotating man that we never got that flow balance. So I'm going to try not to make that mistake this year.
So on the topic of goalkeepers, we're in an interesting position here. Goalkeeper is different than every other position on the field because, you know, if Yoni's like, okay, you know, maybe we want Mason at this attacking position because he brings this. Yoni, okay, we'll just shift you over here. Keepers, you know, they've been playing keeper for so long that they don't bring anything on the field compared to other guys. So you're either in or you're out. And we've got two keepers, Ozzie Tanner and Jeff Nelson, that are both at a very, very high level. And I was curious about what your strategy is going to be for handling that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, right? You know, goalkeeper is kind of an emotional position. You got to have your goalkeeper feeling confident, right? Like if the goalkeepers are confident, they'll come up with those saves that just defy gravity. And you need them to be sharp and you need them to be on. They aren't complacent. You know, Ozzy had it easier in prior years until Jeff showed up on the scene. And that's been good for Ozzy. That's pushed him a little bit. They're both good. I have not spent a lot of time with the goalkeepers. We are going to have Richard Rivas be our goalkeeper trainer. Richard was I think he was on that 2019 team that won the state championship.
Yeah, he was the keeper.
Yeah, he's solid. Rich knows his stuff. He's got a good, easy way of going about it. Paul Betebear is going to come one day, not going to be at games or not going to be coaching any of the field players at all, but he will, you know, he's got some history with the guys and he's been an icon for supporting Vashon soccer for years and years. So he's going to come one day as well. But what we're trying to do is get all of those players on most of the days and certainly the games integrated more in the team. So I want the keepers more on the field because if we can play with their feet, then we can really push up. And if we're playing any kind of a trap or high line, we need those keepers to come out. So they need to be familiar with things like rondos or keepaways and have nice, soft, easy touch. So we're working on that. Some strengths for some of the kids and some they're working on. So we're working through that. But I would say that in general, they push each other. They'll be competitive. In terms of the games, what we will tend to do is start a keeper and they will go the distance. It's a little bit of a wrinkle because I'm a believer that when guys play on the second team, we are going to have a lot of guys playing on both the first team and the second team, mostly because I want those guys to stay fit and sharp. Mm-hmm. And I'm not thinking about the second team games as a a disaster. These need to be training modules, win or lose. I want that to be our crucible for staying fit, for working on tactics, for direction, things of that nature. So I will play one of those guys in at least one half of the second team game. And we don't really have a second team second keeper, so someone's going to have to step up to play that role because I want to keep them available should we get up by a bunch of goals or a person gets hurt, then we will make a change. Other than that, we will not. So, you know, right now we're kind of thinking Ozzy will start for Bush on Thursday and Jeff is going to be starting for Ballard. So both extremely tough teams, both absolutely are going to rely on those keepers. So if those are close games, I don't expect either one of them to get in that game at all. And they know it, but they will be playing earlier in the second team game, if that makes sense. So okay, those players will be doing swing between both, or maybe swing isn't the right word. Maybe just split.
And the reason you can't play them for the whole second team game is because they can only play two halves of soccer.
Yeah, a lot of rules in high school.
Yeah,
So you can't play one sec. If you play 1 second of a half, then you are 1 second of both halves, then you cannot play in the game, the other game that day.
Right. And you need someone, as you say, in case like a keeper goes down, you have to have that backup.
We have a couple guys, you know, like Mason Hayes is actually a pretty good goalie. August Kampmeyer is a pretty good goalie.
He's not terrible.
Yeah. You know, like we have people who can step in. You've played a little bit of goalie, right? Like we've got guys who could go in there should we need them. I'm not too terribly worried about it. It makes me a little nervous against come state tournament time, we're not going to be doing that. We're going to have a total reserve person. Ozzy or Jeff will be on on the sideline. So if one guy gets hurt, we won't miss a beat.
Right.
But I got to get those guys in there, especially in the early part of the season. I got to get them rotating. I got to get them connected to the defense.
All right. Well, we've spent a lot of time talking about the players. I'd like to shift over the conversation a little bit to the coaching side. So with you, you've brought five new coaches, Dark Henan, Jamie O'Neill, Charlie Caldwell, Richard Rivas, and Ole Christofferson. So I'd like you to walk me through your decision process behind each of these coaches and why you wanted to bring them in.
Well, you know, all the old men sit around and pontificate about the high school sports. You know, these are all guys who've coached at BISC, and boy, there's a long list of them. We all play pickup together. And, you know, we've all recognized that, you know, the coaching in the high school is a thankless job. I mean, it's just, you got to shut your day down at, oh gosh. I mean, certainly you got to be on the field by two. Well, mm-hmm. you know, you got to work, then what happens there? So it's always been tough to get guys to come willing to do that. So what I've tried to do this year is, you know, kind of clear my decks for my work a little bit so I can make this work. And then trying to piece together the coaching staff so that we can get the best of what each of those people have to offer so we can give the kids the best push forward we possibly can. And so I thought a little bit about that. I have these guys are great. Like, it's just wonderful working with the guys. We have a very structured plan. We have, I can go into our coaching plan if that makes sense, and then I can talk specifically how the guys work. We basically have three phases. So the first phase is basically the month of March, which is very developmental. We got some games, got some hard games, got some easy league games that kind of don't count. But that's going to be very much where we're working our cardio base, we're working our structure, we're getting guys fit, we're getting them so they can run hard without getting hurt. That's a different kind of practice. That's a grinder practice. We're going to be doing that in March. In April, we're really starting to get into kind of, you know, bringing up the functionality of how we're playing. That's going to be a lot more about team tactics, team movement, you know, quickness, you know, really staying, really working on our speed, things of that nature. When we get into playoff time in May, this is about agility, quick finishes, not a lot of cardio base. We'll still say cardio fit, but we're not grinding like we did in March. So there's a monthly plan that we have set up. And then within each of those monthly plans, we did a periodization per week. So we said, okay, this week, here are our themes. This is what's going on. And we share that with the captains and we share that with all the coaching staff. And we all get in alignment with what we're trying to accomplish that week. At that point, frankly, our jobs are done, right? Like, we've got the structure. All of these guys can shake out, you know, activities during practices that accomplish the tasks. And that's what's wonderful about working with them. So I build every day a comprehensive daily plan of the progression, everything from the warm-up to what the cardio base is going to be for that day to the major coaching goals that we're going to try to hit on that particular day with a whole set of activities. That is then handed to each of the functional area coaches, and then those coaches basically can wad the thing up and do whatever they want. But I want them to have that structure to lean back on. And then, you know, like yesterday, we had Ole come in. Ole's going to be working with our quick, I mean, our kids are already like Spain, especially our midfield. Our midfield can possess anyone in the state. Like, they are quick. And Ole is a genius about that. Anyone that's been playing indoor or futsal with him or playing a pickup with him, they know. Ole knows his movements. He knows his spacing. He's got the timing down. Like, I explained to him what our objectives was. I started to outline it, and Ole's like, I got this. We're going to do this. Great. So they ran a possession rondo with a change of point of attack. We really got that east-west movement moving in the field. And he's wonderful about motivating the kids, getting them going. So I see him being my, you know, tiki-taka kind of keeper. We're really working with the you know, the eights, the tens kind of role. So we're excited. Ole's, you know, he works for a living, so, you know, he can't make it to every practice, but we're hoping to have him out a couple times a week. So he's been a great addition. Again, a guy who probably couldn't quit his job and coach high school soccer, but the fact that we got him out a couple times a week is a win for me. Jamie O'Neill, is excellent player, played for Vashon High School, really respected guy amongst the guys I pick up and on the island and with the kids. So he is going to be taking over more of the defensive role. He's really going to be pulling the defense up. I've got some things to say about that, but I'm really kind of turned that block over to him. And he's going to be able to, he works off island, but he's going to be able to make it at least 3 or 4 days. So we'll keep some continuation with them. But I'm looking for him to really step in as that defensive coordinator and really making sure that our weakest point on our team is when the moments when we lose the ball, we stop. And that's got to end. I need them to get ball side and in their shape immediately when we lose the ball. So Jamie's picking that mantle up and going to run that. Dara's going to float. Dara and I have coached together. We coached on BVB. We coached on VISC when I was development director. And we took the little Arsenal boys, which are all our juniors. So we took them through the VIC gauntlet. So I know Dara's great. Dara can fit in wherever he needs to be. He's been, like we sorted uniforms for 2 hours this morning. He can jump in and handle, help on defense. He can, mix into a rondo if he needs to. He's got the skills. He played a lot in Iowa and Wisconsin. So Dara's going to be a good addition there. Richard, like we talked about, is going to be working with the goalkeepers. Good experience there. And then Charlie Caldwell has stepped up to really run our second team. We want, like I said before, we have huge expectations of that second team as a crucible for really developing the pipeline of players. I feel like those guys have been cast off maybe in past years to do their thing, 4v4, whatever remnant happened to be cut from the varsity side. It's not going to be like that this year. We're going to use that as a real training ground, not only fitness-wise, but also from a tactical and structural standpoint, so that when the guys do get the tap to come up to the first squad, they're in the system, and we've got that. And then, as seniors drop out, that system grows right into the varsity squad.
Well, I have to thank you for bringing in Charlie, because that's got me into a job in the fall, because Charlie is doing high school coaching on the island. He's not allowed to coach a club team from the same area. So I get to take his job as assistant coach for the Vashon under 19s.
Yeah. Well, there's a win that I didn't know.
Yeah. Okay. So if we can go back to players real quick, as you say, we've got a really, really deep and really, really talented squad. So picking varsity, the initial teams and your game to game teams is going to be a challenge. Right. So I'm wondering what your strategy is to go about that.
Okay, so I think we have, I don't know the exact count. I think we have something like 35, 36 guys. And basically what we're going to do is we're going to structure, there's about 8 or 9 guys who just have no business playing on the second team. Like, I don't want them to get hurt. They're hard chargers. I don't expect they will miss a single varsity game. If they're a little tweaky, we might sit them out that week. We are 21, 22 deep, where the difference between the guys that are, below that top 10 or so, there's no difference. Like, we don't lose anything by putting in that, 10th guy, 11th guy, 12th guy, 13th guy, 14th guy, 15th guy. Day to day, those kids play different. And depending on what we need, they're different. So what we're going to do is those guys, they're going to get their kits today. They are going to just have a varsity uniform. I don't expect them to play on the second squad. If they do, we'll dig one out. And then that's only 9 guys. So clearly that's not the varsity team. We're going to list 21 players on varsity. And those 21 players are going to extend down where, roughly half of them each time will be a different combination based on how they play, will be chosen the night before to be playing on the varsity squad. Not only that, most likely they'll be starting on the varsity squad. So some of these guys who maybe are all varsity, a lot of back-to-back games, like, Mason Haynes might be riding the pine in the initial game sometimes. Yoni might be out, Rowan might be out. Like, clearly, 3 of our lead attackers who, you'd want them on the field all the time. Mm-hmm. So those guys easily can rotate through. We got a guy like Rylan Cannot coming up, sophomore, but he has just been killing it in practice.
He has.
So, when Rylan comes up, my expectation is he'll start. And what we're going to try to do is let the players play a larger block of time, so they know that they'll be starting the night before. They can communicate that with their parents, so grandma can come watch, or they can join the Voice of Vashon, or they can stream our live stream so they can see that. And then, you know, they can mentally prepare for that. And then, you know, they'll play a block. They'll probably come out. I mean, I'm not going to be formulaic about it, but my guess is that, you know, it's a 40-minute half, two 40-minute halves, probably a half hour in after they got in the rhythm. You know, maybe we'll make some adjustments. And then the person coming in is going to finish off the half and start the second half. Probably play up until maybe half of the second half. So each guy's going to get a big chunk to get into the flow of the game, get the sense for what's going on, and we're going to try to bring all 22 guys into structure. When we get into that performance week, that list is likely to shrink a little bit in terms of who we're starting, because mm-hmm. then it's about sharpening the pencil to the tip. And in those roles, we're going to be really getting down into a smaller number of guys who get those rotations based on who's really bringing it. Because that's when, you know, that's what it's going to take to do well in the playoffs.
All right. So just to finish things off, as you say, we've got a tough run of fixtures early on. Our first three games are out of conference. We've got Bush, Ballard, then UPrep. Bush and UPrep both play in, that's in my opinion, the toughest 1A district. That includes state champs Overlake and 2 years ago state champs Seattle Academy. And then Ballard are a 3A school that plays top four in the state tournament. So I'm wondering, yeah,
that's, it's going to be, it's serious. I mean, we're getting shot right into the heat of the moment,
which I think is important.
Absolutely.
And I was just wondering how you're prepping the team for those matches.
Strap your helmet on. Let's go.
Just get ready to fight.
I mean, our practices last year were, other than maybe a couple of the playoff games, our practices were the most intense thing we had going. Like almost the whole season.
Yeah.
So Foster was a good game, mm-hmm. but we didn't play that well. We can't be having that. We got to have our matches where we learn what redlining's about. And this team is ready for it. I have talked to them about this. I don't care about our RPI. I don't care at all. We got to go through everyone anyways. So we are going to play the hardest competition we can get. We're going to get prepped. And then, you know, I expect that we'll do well in league, but come playoff time, that's when we're going to be sharp, we're going to be surgical, and we're going to learn how to break down that block, how to tease that block out, and then take advantage of that. So we're going to be working on some specific things to play that strategy. If someone wants to try to run with us, excellent. We're going to dog it in that run.
Yeah.
Like if you want to come out and try to play our game, oh boy.
That's not, no, you
can't wait for that game.
Yeah, that'll be an easy win. You planning on doing any film for Bush?
Yeah, good point. Okay, so we've made some changes this year. We've the high school has contracted with a film person, and it's an AI camera. And it's too busy tracking a seagull that's flying over the left hand corner of the field. So we got the booster club, which has really stepped up. We've formed a new booster club, as most folks know. Please help support the booster club. They have chipped in with Jesse Nelson, who is Jeff Nelson's father, who has a VO account. These are not cheap accounts. These allow us to stream in HD, but most importantly, what we can do is can go into an interactive mode. So if the AI is tracking the ball in the attacking third, I can zoom over and see where is our back line. How's our back line looking? There's advanced analytics in this thing that can break down the shape, make recommendations in terms of what our shape looks like, how well we're doing that line. And most importantly, the way we're going to do film is we are... After each game, I've got a dozen kids or more that expect and want to play in college. So those players better be doing their film analysis every night.
Oh, yeah.
We finish a game, they can click on their number, and they can see all their touches on the ball. Now, I hope they go not just to that little mini clip there, but we tested this the other day. You know, Avery McLean had 6 minutes, and I think it was less than that, like two or three minutes of 15, 20 highlights where he was touching the ball. So you can stop. He can freeze that. He can look. Oh, yeah, I didn't check my shoulder there. The pass could have gone left. Those players are going to look at that film. They're going to evaluate it. They're going to get back to me on three things. How's our team shape? How can we improve? What should we work on? That's going to feed what our practice plans look like in the upcoming. They're going to look at, what am I doing well? What do I feel like my strengths are? How can I maximize those strengths more? And what do I need to work on? What are my personal goals? They're going to be talking to each of their coaches about that. And then that is what's going to drive those team analysis are what's going to drive what we're going to cover in when we do film. So we're kind of taking it and making it a little asynchronous. We still maybe get together and talk about general shape like we did last year with, you know, PowerPoints and some video, but we're all not going to sit around watching 45 minutes of, you know, the ball going out of bounds. It's going to be a lot more condensed. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a lot more integrated. It's going to be a lot more personalized. And hopefully, you know, the value of doing film is in reflection. We expect to film scrimmages, practice scrimmages, so we can do that analysis as well. And, you know, sometimes when you're managing kids or you're managing the games, you get your emotions up, you don't see things as clearly as you do if you're just like going back and calmly going through things and realizing, oh, my back, my outside back isn't pulling his midfielder back fast enough or whatever the case is. So I'm excited about that. The kids are excited about that. Thank you, Boosters. Thank you, Jesse Nelson, for making that happen. Super excited about that. The other thing is the kids can use that for their team roles, because these guys are sending out their video summaries to all the coaches for recruiting. So we're going to do our best to get these guys who want to go to the next level to the next level.
Well, I can tell you that the kids absolutely, for the last scrimmage that we taped, they absolutely did look at it, because once Lewis sent out the links into our group chat, about 10 minutes later, somebody came back and they'd clipped that when Quilt Hagenfeld Foeman just completely crunched Ryland Cannot right at the end. Someone took it, clipped it, and then someone else took it and slow-mo'd it.
Yeah, it's really awesome. You know, it's got a whole timeline. So if you just want to see the goals, you can just scrub through to the marker and just watch the goal. I mean, it's just so efficient. And, you know, these kids are busy. They are AP. They're in the SATs right now. Like, these guys are busy. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying my best to make things as intense and personalized and time-saving and really maximize the learning for them.
All right. Well, that's it from me. Anything else you want to, any other points you want to make? Anything you want to shout out?
Yeah. I mean, I think the things I covered in the parent interview that we haven't talked about already, you know, one point I would ask the whole community again to do is to really start taking a different approach with our referees. I know you guys, everyone's, you know, excited. Oh, come on, referee. That guy, you know, killed our guy. But I'd really like to start to develop a different relationship with the referees. They all make mistakes. I would like to play a flat four with a trap. The reason why I can't really do that is that the quality of our linesmen is poor. And one of the reasons why the quality of our linesmen is poor is because the guys who probably can do the job don't want to take the abuse. And then the cycle continues. So we are not able to truly maximize the style we want to play, because it's not just our problem, but it's a problem, I think, across the world with how we deal with referees. You see it, you know, the EPL, the MLS guys going up to the referee, putting their nose in the guy's face and screaming and yelling. Like, why? Like, let's just stop doing that as a culture. So mm-hmm. at least we're going to try to do that on this island. So please, if you know, I don't want you to get in a fight with an opposing fan if they're bashing the referee, but please help, at least for our side. You won't ever see me yell at a referee, ever. I don't think you've ever seen me talk. I might question a call, really, but I'm never going to be yelling, "Aw, come on, ref." No way. You'll never hear that from me. And I expect that from my players as well.
And it's not an entirely easy thing to do, because when you're there, and even if you're just a fan watching the game and your kid's in there, you know, you're invested. You really care. And
totally.
And when you see a call not go your way, it's hard to stay silent. And personally, this is just how I feel. I don't think you necessarily have to stay silent. What you cannot do is actually abuse the referee. And what we got cited for last year was actual abuse. That obviously there's sure. No place for that.
I don't have a problem with a groan or like, oh gosh. But you got to realize that this guy's on the field. Now, I mean, he might not have the best angle, but he's probably got a better angle than you have.
Mm-hmm.
So let's respect that. And, you know, when you guys were little, I used to play this game with you. You got like 7 or 8 or 10 or whatever. And we would be scrimmaging, and the red guy would hit the ball off the white guy and go out. And I would say, "White ball." And the red guy would flip out. And I'm like, I'm going to continually call it the wrong way until you realize the person who gets the throw is the person the referee deems gets the throw. So reality has no business here. The only reality that you have to pay attention to is whatever the referee says.
Yeah, that brings up a whole different point that I'll make. So in English class, we're learning about the different eras of understanding when it comes to linguistic development. And 10 years old is right at the time when your mind is most focused on what is fair. So you're getting them right when it's hardest to see a call purposely made wrong.
It's a pretty funny process when you're younger. You guys aren't 10 anymore. You guys know that now. And, you know, there is a little bit of influence you can have with the referee. I remember in college getting some bad calls because, like I said, we used to dump guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can say, oh, come on, you know, really? Like, you know, but very respectful and then just walk away. You know, like, it's all good. You know, that... You can influence the referee a little bit there, but I just don't want to get into a hostile environment. Let the kids go. And hey, parent, I know it's tough to watch, but if your kid gets a little heavy touch and that ball goes out for a little too far, and that defensive back comes through and cleans house, that's a clean tackle. Stop yelling.
Yeah, you know, as a referee who's reffed at a bunch of levels, you know who I think the biggest target should be for stop complaining to the refs are the coaches. And this is obviously not you. You have never shown any, you know, situations where you're yelling at the ref. But if I'm in the middle, you know, I want to hear the players. The parents in the back, it just kind of goes over me as crowd noise. But when a coach is yapping at me from the touchline, they won't stop. And it's the hardest thing to deal with.
Yeah, you won't hear that from me.
No, and I'm not.
Or my coaching staff.
But I think.
No, we're conscious of that. No, you're right. And, you know, it's hard because, you know, like the coaches, I mean, we're people too, right? We get all excited and we want to win and you want to do everything you can. Like in the semifinal, when Newcomb has taken the penalty kick and he apparently has the green light to take the corner, and then we score to tie the game in the 88th minute in the state semifinal, and then it gets pulled back. That hurts.
It hurts. And it hurts because, I mean, if you know the game, you know that that linesman kind of blew it. Like, the center ref did what he had to do. He had to blow the whistle because it's a sub. And when you blow the whistle before a corner, you have to blow the whistle to take the corner again. The linesman was kind of out to lunch. And when you're in a state semifinal, you expect that linesman to be basically standing in front of Isaac Newcomb to make absolutely certain that he does not take that corner, because it puts your center in the worst position where he has to do what he did and call it back. And then, you know, people started yelling at the center because they don't understand that.
Right. But, I mean, this isn't the World Cup, but even in the World Cup, it happens. Like mm-hmm. Diego Maradona with the hand of God. You know, like the refs will miss some calls. You just hope it doesn't go your way. You know, it's like tennis. You hit the net, the ball bounces up. Sometimes the ball bounces on your side or their side. You know, this is sports, you know, like it doesn't always fall the right way. Let's be mature about it and just, you know, mm-hmm. what happens next is what's important. We get a bad call. Just let's get over it. We can all move on.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming. It's been really great to have you. Thank you everybody tuning in. Remember, first game is Bush Wednesday, March 13th. Then we have Ballard. The Bush game is at 5:15, or Varsity's at 5:15, I believe. And then the Ballard game Saturday the 15th is, oh man, I feel like I forgot my homework.
Yeah,
here.
I'll help you out here, Oscar. Okay, so the 13th, that's this Thursday, we have Bush. With the 15th, we have Ballard. Varsity plays at 2:15, I believe. Then we've got U Prep the following Friday, that's March 21st. Mm-hmm. And then we actually have three games, a lot of back-to-back games, but you know, I won't bore you with those details. That's going to be the 24th, 26th, 27th. So we mm-hmm. got that spring break. The kids will take a break, and then we'll go back into it. There is a stretch here where if 7 days, 5 games. Oh, you know,
that's hard.
It's going to be a little tough for us there. But that's why we have that deep squad.
Please, please come to the games. Please, please come out and support. You know, it means a lot to the players. It makes the game experience more fun, builds the atmosphere, you know, and having a crowd makes it tougher for away teams to come play. I mean, there's something to say about an atmosphere. And obviously, if you can't make the games, I'll be broadcasting all of them, voiceofashon.org or, you know, the actual radio station, but voiceofashon.org.
Yeah. I mean, I would have to say, you know, like the soccer community is really starting to gain momentum. Like, we're going to have sandwich boards on all the corners advertising the games. So that way, you know, you're mm-hmm. coming back from work, you forget that the guy's got a game at 5 o'clock. Come on out. We got the band's going to be playing this year. Like, we're going to try to mm-hmm. pack those stands. And, you know, what the heck? We live in an island. It's fun. You know, like, come to some of the prep stuff. It's good. Get involved. Really friendly group. We got just such a great group of supportive parents. Everybody cheers, has a good time. You know, like, you know, ends up at Colvo's afterwards. Yeah. You know, like, it's just fun. Like, and just come out and support the kids.
And we're good. I mean, we are going to provide some good entertainment. We are pushing for state this year. We are a good squad. Not that that should matter, but we are a great watch. You know, we're always gonna play well, even if we lose. So
yeah,
come out.
I mean, let me just end on that note. Like, the coaches are truly in awe of these players. These kids, this group that has come through. There's a group in West Seattle and the group on Vashon. They happen to all kind of be the same age. These guys have a lot of identity around soccer, and they have worked their butts off for the last decade on the sport, and they are just magicians with the ball. They are such a talented group of kids. They're a dream to coach. And that's why, yeah, frankly, we don't even have to, you know, they can run the show themselves, but they are impressive on how they work the ball. I don't care who you are. If you watch a few of the games, I think you'll be, you'll really see, some magic out there. So come watch it. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming, and I'll see you on the pitch.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.